Okay, so thank you for listening to that introduction, and I want to share with you this evening a little bit about Sangha and Kalyanamitta. And we will do that through meditation, discussion, and some readings, you know. And so Sangha and Kalyanamitta, are you familiar with it? Any nods or no? Some nods, some yes. So once I define them, you may have a little bit of a understanding. So one thing I didn't mention in my intro is that I tend to come from the Theravada Buddhist perspective because that's just what I'm steeped in. That's just what where I landed and I stayed there because, you know, it was working. If it don't work, if it don't break, what is it? If it's not broke, don't fix it. Hold on. That life. Oh yes. Thank you. I apologize for not asking for did you can you is it working? Is the inscription, the live transcript working? If you need to go down to your to the CC at the bottom of your skin and you can hit view full transcript or also hit subtitles if you want to see them. Okay, thank you, and I apologize. Are there any other access needs? Yeah, if something comes up, let me know. You know, thank you for speaking up. And so, but I'm going to turn off mine. Can you still see yours if I turn them off? I hope. Okay, thank you. Great. So, yes, we're going to talk about Sangha and Kalyanamitta. And so, Sangha. Oh yeah, I was saying that I didn't say in my intro that I basically come from a Buddhist perspective. I'm steeped in the Theravada tradition. I've studied and practiced with other lineages and stuff, but not to the point where I'm an expert on, oh, this is that lineage and this is that. I know I blend things together, you know, and as a person of African American descent, Latina descent, indigenous descent, I'm blended anyway. And so I blend things together anyway to get through this life. So I'm sure that, you know, there's more than Theravada here, but you know, that's where I tend to come from. That's where my training and my practice is. And so Sangha is a Pali word, and it's translated as community. So in this book, one of the Pali canon books, the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length discourses of the Buddha, Bhikkhu Bodhi and Bhikkhu Nanamoli translate Sangha as the Buddhist monastic order. That's like traditionally what the Sangha was at the Buddha's time or the time of the Buddha. And it also is the community of noble disciples. And then we have Thich Nhat Hanh, who wrote an article in 2017, and Thich Nhat Hanh explains that Sangha is more than a community, it's a deep spiritual practice. That's the preface to the article. But the first sentence is, a Sangha is a community of friends practicing the Dharma together in order to bring about and maintain awareness. So it's a community, and it's a community of friends and practitioners together. And you'll find communities and sanghas and groups and connections in many different spiritual practices or non-spiritual practices, people that come together. Humanity, we are a community. We have a challenge living in community in our with humanity, but we are the community on this earth and this planet. And so we tonight in the Buddhist tradition are a sangha of practitioners practicing together. And here we can practice together in a way that helps to keep our practice alive. We can learn from one another. We can support one another as well. Kalyanamitta is an aspect of Sangha. It is translated as spiritual friendship. It's when you have, let's see. In this article called The Good Friend, written by Sarah Shaw, she says that a special emphasis is given in the canon, however, to a particular relationship, that of the Kalyanamita, the good or lovely friend, or the friend in what is lovely, who may give guidance and encouragement in meditation. The good friend is important as someone in whom one can place trust and to whom one can talk to openly about the meditation practice and the problems connected to it. So Kalyanamita, in my opinion, it's a deeper connection. So you have a sangha, a group of people that you practice with, and you can benefit from the energy, the wisdom in the room, coming together, sharing practice, sharing stories, sharing your experience with the Dharma or meditation. And then there's another level where you might begin to practice with the same friends or the same meditation buddies over time, and you develop a deeper relationship on the path. And that is Kalyanamita. And in my experience, I have, there'll be times I do a lot of retreats. That's what I like to do, silent retreats. And a lot of times I have been on retreat, sitting with some people, not knowing who they are, and at the end, just feeling so connected. And then I may not see them again till the next retreat. And I'm like, oh, I saw you at the PLC. Oh, that's right. Hey, you sitting again? Yeah, I'm sitting again. Great. That's Kalyanamita, even though I don't know that person very well. And another level of it, I was just recently in a training, a mentor training, a mindfulness mentor training program, and I connected with a woman on there, and we went to lunch yesterday, and I was like, ah, Kalyanamita. Because honestly, when I started to share about Kalyanamita just a couple of weeks ago, and I had never been asked to share about Kalyanamita, and I'm like, what am I going to say? But what I really found is that Kalyanamita, like a lot of the meditation and mindfulness and Buddhist practices, is an embodied experience. It's an experience. It's something that we actually do, that we actually connect with other people. You know, I didn't know it had a name. I call them my Dharma buddies. I have people in my phone listed as my Dharma buddy, you know. It's like, oh, Kalyanamita. So that's basically what we're going to talk about today. Gil Fronsdale, another teacher who I love and learn a lot from, says this: an important part of the interpersonal aspect of Buddhist practice, and put anything in there, but, you know, meditation if you're not comfortable with Buddhist, but this is where it's coming from. An important part of the interpersonal aspect of Buddhist practice is having spiritual friendships. The Buddha emphasized this when he said that the precursor for the eightfold path is having good spiritual friends, Kalyanamita. These are the people with whom we share the practice and who support us in the practice. While it includes our peers on the path, the term Kalyanamita is also a common expression for a Buddhist teacher in our Theravada Buddhist tradition. For us, a teacher is more a friend than a guru, more a supporter than an authority figure. So it's a very important part of our practice. Which is interesting to me because when I first started meditating, you know, all I wanted to do was sit, meditate, and be by myself. Go on retreat, sit, practice being silenced by myself. I didn't want to be bothered with, that was part of the reason I went to retreat, because I wanted to get off the treadmill, be alone, and just sit with myself and be by myself. I didn't want to be with people. But on a silent retreat, I found myself sitting there. You know, there are about 100 other people there. And I'm, you know, it is an internal practice and I'm reflecting on myself and I'm doing my practice. But sometimes I'll be in the hall. You know, you're sitting, standing, walking, eating, sitting, standing, walking, eating every day for like, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 days. You know, it's what I wanted to do, but it can be difficult. So I'll be sitting there practicing, having some issue, some thought or some story, or maybe it's just the fact that I don't want to sit anymore. Like, is a bell gonna ring, you know? Or maybe I'm frustrated. Maybe there's something agitating or irritating, or maybe there's an emotion coming up that I don't want to deal with. Maybe it's hot. Who knows what it is, but something is hindering my practice. You know, and there's a whole teaching on hindrances, you know, but that's not my point. This point is I'd sit there frustrated, ready to get up, want to go, and you can't leave because it's so silent. And I would peek open my eyes slowly because I don't want anyone to see me looking. And I would see 100 people sitting so still, so peaceful, that I felt the power. And I would go, oh, okay, and close my eyes again and continue. It's like they got me through just by seeing them, seeing the backs of their heads. Who knows what's going on in their head? Who knows if it's anything like mine? But when I saw, it was like because they were holding their posture, I was able to continue with my meditation. They gave me the strength and the inspiration to continue. And another thing is that, eventually I started studying, doing these programs and things, and there would be this group and that group, a buddy group, this group, and you had to have a buddy, and then you had to have a group of six. And I was like, I don't want anything to do with the Sangha. I just still wanted to study by myself, right? But again, I found myself drawn to the Sangha. I found myself benefiting from the Sangha. I found myself making friendships, deep spiritual friendships that I never thought I'd make. That I wasn't out to do it, really. I wanted to be by myself. And basically, there's three jewels in the Dharma. There's the Buddha, the historical figure in our individual nature to become enlightened, our own Buddha nature. There's the Dharma, seeing things as they are. And also the formal teachings of the Buddha is known as the Dharma. And then there's the Sangha, that third jewel. And as much as I tried to push that third jewel away, because I just wanted the Buddha and the Dharma. And I love people, but when it came to my practice, I wanted to just meditate by myself and be undisturbed. But the Sangha kept turning up to be the shiniest jewel of them all, those spiritual friendships. And what, and you don't even have to know people. At least in my experience, I didn't. Especially there was a time when I had gone through deep grief. Lost several people in that I was close to died in my life. People, beings, and I felt like my family was shrinking, and I was so sad. And then I realized that my spiritual friendship, my Sangha, was huge, and it was growing, and it was supportive. And that I definitely took refuge in the Sangha. And then another thing is when, I found when I wanted to talk about the Dharma, I wanted to talk about my practice, there were only certain people that I could talk about it with that were really interested or to go deep with, right? Or that could understand because they've done it, so they could get it when I said something, you know. And here again in Gil Fronsdal says in his article, The Role of Friendship on the Path, that Dharma friendships are also wonderful places to have Dharma discussions, to explore the teachings and our experiences and practice through conversations with others can deepen our understanding in many ways. It can bring us new perspectives, questions, and areas for further discussion. And further investigation, excuse me. To have these discussions with people who know us well adds to the value of these conversations. So, when you begin to practice with people over time and have discussions with these people about your practice, you learn and you deepen your understanding in some way. And that is my hope with sharing the Dharma. It's like, what can I share about my experience, my understanding of these practices, my experience with meditation, the challenges and the benefits that will benefit you? That's it. I just want to share something that I hope will benefit you on your path, whatever your path is. And the Buddha himself said that friendship was important. The Buddha's attendant, Ananda, came to the Buddha and said to the Buddha, hey, This is my interpretation. I'll read the actual sutta in a minute, but my interpretation is, hey, Buddha, Honorable Buddha, friendship is half of the spiritual path, isn't it? And the Buddha said, don't say that, Ananda, don't say that. No. Friendship is the whole of the spiritual path. So let me read what it actually says, what it was actually translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi, translated this sutta as. It's called Half of the Holy Life. I'll just read this part. Sounds completely different than my voice. This is Ananda speaking. Venerable sir, this is half of the holy life, that is, good friendship, good companionship, good camaraderie. Not so, Ananda, not so, Ananda. This is the entire holy life, Ananda. That is good friendship, good companionship, good comradeship. When a bhikkhu has a good friend, a good companion, a good comrade, it is to be expected that, I'll say they, will develop and cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. So the Buddha says it's essential for us to have spiritual friends on the path. It is the entire of the so-called holy life or spiritual life or meditation path. Going to read one more thing. This is going back to Thich Nhat Hanh to say, how can the Sangha help us? And I blend Sangha and Kalyanamitta together, right? Because Sangha is the community, and within the community we have spiritual friends. And Kalyanamitta is particularly about, I think, closer friends, when you go into deeper practice, but basically spiritual friends, buddies, Dharma buddies, meditation practitioners, whatever you want to call it. It's like the Sangha and our Kalyanamitta, our friendships, our community in the practice on the path can support us in many ways. And this alludes to what I think I was feeling on retreat and still feel, it's part of like knowing that you're there, people are there. Even tonight when I was leading the guided meditation, I felt the energy of you all there, which supported me in meditating myself. Even though I was leading the meditation, offering some guidance, I was more grounded than I was today doing it by myself. So, how a Sangha helps us. Thich Nhat Hanh said, the presence of a Sangha is a wonderful opportunity to allow the collective energy of the Sangha to penetrate into our body and consciousness. And that's kind of what I was inviting you to do at the beginning of practice for those of you who were there to look and see who you're actually practicing with. Really being mindful that you chose to come and practice in community with other people for some reason. And that when you can allow that collective energy in, like Thich Nhat Hanh says, and allow it to penetrate your body and your consciousness, something happens. I feel knowing when I'm sitting with other people. Also knowing that the challenge, because sometimes it's not pleasant for me, but there's still a benefit even then, He goes on to say, we can entrust ourselves to the Sangha because the Sangha is practicing and the collective energy of mindfulness is strong. The collective energy of mindfulness is strong. That helps me continue to have faith in this practice. Because sometimes this life gets so tough. There's so many things going on in the world. Oh, I'm not even going to name them because I might miss one. But you can probably think of something in either your own personal life or in the broader life. We're all indirectly impacted or directly impacted the closer it gets to us. But the collective energy of mindfulness is strong because sometimes I ask myself, what am I doing? What am I doing sitting here teaching meditation, practicing the Dharma, going on retreats when the world is on fire? But Thich Nhat Hanh right here says it, the collective energy of mindfulness is strong. And I'm like, yes, it's energy. Because if that negative energy is impacting me, some of the suffering that's happening in the world, if that's causing me, impacting me, and causing me to have anxiety, causing me to be sad, depressed, lose my hope, and get me angry and frustrated, that's energy. So yes, this collective energy, this collective mindfulness is strong, and we can benefit ourselves and other beings by coming together and doing this, doing something that's not causing harm. It's beneficial because we're cultivating our minds and our hearts in a way that my intention is so that it leads to more suffering for myself. Oh, leads to less suffering for myself and others. It might lead to more suffering sometimes, but my intention is that it leads to less suffering for others, myself and others. Because again, me walking around as an individual, if I'm harnessing and eluding negative energy, bad attitude, anger, frustration, we all have it all, and it comes out. If I'm doing that, I know that it impacts people I come across. I can see it, especially in my family. My family will let me know, right? They'll tell me, "What's wrong with you?" And so the same thing, if I can tend to those qualities, if I could tend and learn to be with and understand my anger and take a breath and take a pause so that I can respond instead of react, then I can cultivate, a kinder, more benevolent way to be with myself and then ultimately be in the world and then ultimately impact other beings without even doing anything. But taking care of this heart, and a lot of times it feels selfish to me, but every now and then I catch a glimpse of how it's beneficial. Yes, I have to do the reflective work, and that's the thing. It's a personal, it's a paradox, right? It's a personal practice, and yet there's a community effort and a community connection, and that energy, that collective energy, like Thich Nhat Hanh says, is strong. So we can impact the world through our practice and each other. And although we can rely on the energy of the sorry, although we can rely on the energy of mindfulness that is generated by our personal practice, sometimes it is not enough. But if you know how to use that energy of mindfulness in order to receive the collective energy of the Sangha, you will have a powerful source of energy for your transformation and healing. So, Sangha, community, Kalyanamitta, spiritual friendship, meditation buddies, practice, people you practice with, whether you know them or not, can support you in your personal transformation and healing. We can support each other. And what's a trip to me about it is that you don't have to do anything, really. I don't have to tell you. I mean, I get to speak today and read and share my understanding and interpretation of this, but it's up to you to do it and to practice. It's not something we put on each other, which I love too. And the Buddha said, it's not, don't believe in it. It's not about believing in it. Go see for yourself. This is the wisdom, this is the information, this is what. This is the Buddha saying, this is what he discovered. And he finally shared it, thank goodness, because I don't know where my life would be without it right now. Thank goodness he shared it. But it was like he shared the information in a way that was really is really palatable for me. Do this, and this will be the outcome. Do this, and this will be the outcome. Just go see. One will lead to more suffering and one will lead to less suffering. As you know, it's amazing. And the thing is, there are many wisdom teachings, many spiritual practices, again, that have community and have study partners and groups, etc., because there's a benefit to it, right? So it's not just particular to Buddhist practices. However, in the Buddhist practice, in the Buddhist tradition, it is important. And it is upheld highly. It is one of the three jewels: Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Sangha. And then a deeper aspect of Sangha, Kalyana Mita, spiritual friendship. So, yeah, I think that's really all I have to say about it. Let me see if I made the points that I wanted to make. Yeah, I mean, Sangha and Kalyanamitta, Sangha's community, Kalyanamitta, spiritual friendship, and it's important to our practice. And we can benefit from it and benefit each other. And it's important to practice alone. It's not saying that our personal practice and solo practice, because we know that the Buddhas, the monks, and everybody, they go practice on their own, and that we have our own practice. We need that time too. But with the community, we can strengthen our practice and we can have support along the path and deepen our understanding, maybe even be inspired, maybe even be encouraged, or maybe even just go, oh, goodness, you can't sit every day either. I'm okay. We need each other for our practice. And yeah, it's supportive. It supports our practice. So with that said or shared, oh, how do you, let me see, there's a text. Oh, okay. Let me put it to everyone. There are, I've seen Kalyanamitta spelled two ways, and it doesn't have the correct punctuation on it. That's one way, and then there's, it's separate. And there's a, and for those of you that are not, maybe not looking at chat, like I don't always, Kalyanamitta, all one word, or either you can separate it, Kalyana, another word, Mita, Mitta. On the one that's all one word, there's a, the long dash over the second A, Kalyana, and then a long dash over the A, Namitta. And I don't think I have the separate one. Yeah, the other one is, I don't see any punctuation on it, but I'm not sure if that's correct. Thank you for asking. And just for the sake of it, Sangha. So I would love to open up to discussion, Questions and responses. I mean, I have the answer, but I have some, some prompts that I've written for inspiration, but you might already have something on your mind. But, kind of like, well, what does Sangha mean to you? What does Kalyanamitta mean to you? How are they the same or different? And how do they, how do they show up or in your practice? Or anything else you want to, anything you'd like to share, I'd love to hear. Everyone's not jumping at once, so you don't need to use your Zoom hand. But if it gets hard to tell if there's a question, I would love it if you would use your Zoom hand. But right now, I think everyone's not, what do you call it, chomping at the bit. Oh, worth noting that someone is sharing that Spirit Rock supports and lists many Kalyanamitta groups with brief descriptions of their locations and contact details. Yes, there are Kalyanamitta groups. Absolutely. That was actually the first time I kind of formally heard that word was on the Spirit Rock website. I used to work there as a retreat manager, and I was like, Kalyanamitta? But, I wasn't interested in groups, so I didn't sign up. But I highly, recommend, study buddies practice. But I would, oh, someone was in a Kalyanamitta group before the pandemic. and would like to rejoin one. Okay, why don't you check out the spiritrock.org website to see if they have any happening online at this time. And so this brings up a good point that there are formal Kalyanamitta groups. Thank you for bringing that up. Like there are groups that there are people that will coordinate you. And then there are some that will organically happen for you as well. I like to think of, today I have you all as Kalyanamitta. We can discuss. Oh, there's a question? Oh, we can have, we're discussing. We may never see each other again, but then there are the groups that can support you in cultivating those relationships.
So are the groups that are located at Spirit Rock, are they open to new people?
I'm not sure. The person that wrote that, would you like to, do you know anything else about it that you can share?
No, I was the person who wrote it.
Oh, you were. I thought I saw a different name. Somebody else wrote that they were actually, you wrote, were you the one that wrote? Somebody wrote they want to be in one and rejoin. That was you. And
Yes.
then before that, someone wrote that Spirit Rock supports and lists many Kalyanamitta groups with brief descriptions of their locations and contact details. So if you go to the Spirit Rock website, are you familiar with Spirit Rock Meditation
Yes.
Center?
Yes.
Yeah, perhaps. I'm not sure, but that's a start.
Great. Thank you.
And then I know that there's a group that I there's an organization I teach with now online called Cloud Sangha, and we specialize in immersion groups, long-time study groups, or groups of about 6 to 12 people that practice weekly, ongoingly, and those are open for new people to join.
Okay, thank you.
And the groups say their conditions. Is that a question or that's a statement that the groups say their conditions and availability? Okay, thank you. I think it's a statement. So, does anyone want to share? Well, obviously, there's some interest in Kalyanamitta. I'd like to hear maybe the people that mentioned the groups and asked the question. Can do you want to share a little bit about your interest, Nan? Like, what? I'm thinking that's your name, is it, Nan? That's what
Nan,
I'm
yes,
reading.
Nan,
Okay, Nan.
yes.
Thank you. Would you like to share about your interest?
Yes, I was in a Kalyanamitta group and they were all climate activists. And then during the pandemic, it kind of fell apart and we weren't able to get it back together again. And I would like to have something similar to that.
And what were some of the benefits that you got out of being in the Kalyanamitta group?
Well, I think that there was we were doing a lot of demonstrating and being out on the streets, and there was a lot of tension around the climate, and it so helped to be together. It released some of the tension and stress that we had. Worrying about the climate and the fires, and we spent time reading together things about the climate and also Buddhist things, and it was really helpful to be together, and that would give us the support to do the work that we were doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, and yeah, I'm glad that you're inspired to do that again, and I hope you find your group.
I will. I'm going to
Yeah.
thank you for sort of inspiring me to get back into one.
Oh, well, thank you for letting me know that you got inspired. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Anyone else want to share or have a comment or anything? If that's your first time hearing it, how is it sitting with you? Is anyone out there like me that didn't want to do any group talking? Maybe that's why I don't want to say anything. You want to be in the group, but you don't want to say anything, you know? Yes, John? Or are you saying, yes, I want to be in the group and I don't want to say
Both, both. Thank you for the lovely talk, Rowena. And James is, you know, I love the guy, and there was a little what a long time ago when I was in graduate school, you know, this is like 35 years ago or something. James, he was usually not around, but he would arrange for people to sit in his basement room, a lovely room, when he lived in Harwood Street. And I was an early practitioner. I went to a retreat or something, and so I had some familiarity. And it was just sitting for 45 minutes, no discussion before or after. It was just sitting. And it was clear that, you know, he is a powerful practitioner, was providing protection around this space. But gosh, that was wonderful. And I'm wondering whether, you know, somehow that could, if there is a group in Berkeley of just two or three people sitting for 45 minutes then a Sunday evening or some evening, I just have such wonderful memories of that experience. And he would typically have one person, you know, ring the bell, but that was it. Are you familiar with any of that, any possibilities there, Ramona, or does anybody in Berkeley have any?
Somebody put something in the chat, so let me see if that has anything to do. Oh, there's, I'll read this first. The groups, my group is in the East Bay now. All virtual, is focused on relationship generally. We choose books or articles or webcasts to share and discuss. Mm-hmm. I've gotten much support and growth through this group. So, is that just to me? Do you want to share this information? Where'd it go? Stephen, do you want to share that? Do you want me to post it on the everyone, or is that just for me about your group in Berkeley to read out loud?
I can share it generally if you're here.
Okay, and I'll come back to you, John, to see, but Steve might have something for you.
Yes. I have been in this group in the East Bay for probably 4 or 5 years now. Now it's all on Zoom. And I value it a great deal. We're now at about 8 people regularly. We could be up to 10, but that depends on who's interested in joining. And we meet twice a month. And that information is for everyone. It is listed on the Spirit Rock list. So there's contact information there.
Okay, so what's the name of the group that John can look into?
I don't know that we have a name for the group. It's
so how would he know it was your group if he was interested in connecting?
I haven't looked at it lately, but it's probably simply under a geographic location, East Bay, perhaps Berkeley, Oakland. And most of us are reasonably close.
Okay. And you're still doing Zoom. So is that helpful, John? Maybe you could you'll check that out and try a couple of groups and see which ones there are. Yeah. And, you know, and there's a way, you know, I don't know if everyone here comes all the time or, you know, what it is, but these are when people are wanting to just sit, you can always, you know, share your information if you're comfortable in doing it that way too. But I did note here, you know, to ask James about that, you know, even if it was virtual, I know in person, that sounds like it was really, really intimate, you know, it sounds really, really great, but I'll definitely, he'll hear the recording. I'll definitely let him know there's that interest again. East Bay Meditation Center has some, not necessarily Kalyanamitta group, but some sitting groups, and they are doing stuff online as well. What were you going to say, Stephen? I apologize.
Simply that we are not just a sitting group. We start with a 20-minute sit, and we do a personal check-in and a little bit of group business about choosing a book or meeting times. But basically, we're now meeting for an hour and a half on two Mondays a month.
Okay. Thank you. So it sounds like the groups probably figure out what they want to do and how they want to do it, in a sense. And then I mentioned Cloud Sangha, the place that I teach for as well, where they start different. We have different groups. You can join immersion groups for an extended period of time. And right now, when you join, you could do something like explore and do some community meditations or community discussion groups as you try to feel your way out. So you might want to check that out, too. Yeah, anyone else on, yeah, James. You're on mute. Maybe, do I need to ask you? Okay. Oh.
He's coming. There we go. Hello.
Hi.
I appreciate you coming here, and it was an excellent sit. This is something that's come up for me. You know, I've got aphasia, so I've been a little trouble speaking, but I used to do a lot of groups and things like that, and I was just thinking, I see you putting a lot in there and giving and being very Donna, and people are kind of like, huh, you know, including me. So if this were me, what would I do? Okay, I'd start asking some of these people, so what does this mean to you specifically? Which, you know, and put it out there with an open-ended question, you know, get people going. I can't say it right now, but myutic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know, just say, you know, Mr. Wolf, I really appreciate you. So when we talk about the three jewels, which one specifically affected you? Once people aren't saying anything, you start throwing it on them.
Thank you, James. So go on, Mr. Wolf, get it started for me. Answer that one. I appreciate it, though. I appreciate the feedback. I really do. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a little hesitant to call on people.
Oh, I don't.
Okay. You know, well, I like that question, so I'm going to flip it.
Throw it out there. It's like being a birth person, giving birth. Mm-hmm. You know, you put it out there and they pull it up.
Coaching
and
along.
Whatever they have to say and get other people going on it.
Okay, I'm going to try it out with you and say, so James, which of the three jewels get you going?
The Dhamma. The Dhamma means everything. Right now, but because I retired after two seizures, there was the COVID, and, you know, I had a lot of the books and things, and, you know, originally I did, as a kid, lived in Okinawa. That was my younger brother. It was his first language, Japanese.
Wow.
So, you know, it just pulled me back into it, because I go in and out, and, but the Dhamma was the most important. I knew other people that would say, well, I'm a Buddhist. Well, so, well, that's, you could be anything. You know, what does the Dhamma mean to you? Are you asking questions? Are you critical? Buddha didn't say just, believe it. You know, you've got to be critical. You've got to be skeptical and practical, and to be skillful in every way. And so that's what I've had to do now that, you know, I've had disabled now, you know, not working, not driving, you know, this and that. And, you know, I'm getting on with it, but that's what the Dhamma is, to looking every day, every morning, managing, looking at the others would be the paramitas. It's huge.
Mm-hmm,
and that always starts off when people talk about the Dhamma. And, you know, it's really important. We need the teachers. We need the mendicants. We need the structure. We need the Sangha as a community. Yes, yes, yes. But what And then when I learned that Donna is deeper than just, okay, we need to share and put some money on the kitty. It's much deeper than that. It's relinquishing to get rid of the attachment. Because as you get rid of more attachment, you become more generous and you become kinder. And then you can kind of move on and get deeper into other parts of the Dhamma, but everything starts with that. If you don't start if you can't release some of these attachments, you know, you can't be generous. And then you can't, because you have the Dana, then you can develop a practice of Sila. And as you see that, and that's happening, but what happens after that? Some of it stick. You start realizing all these things are going, but damn, the world's just, you know, pissing me off. People are pissing me off. And so I need forbearance. You need to be patient and to sit with it and look at what is pissing you off and what is your part in this. You know, that's where I'm coming from.
Well, thank you for sharing and for inspiring me. And that is exemplary of the, for me anyway, of how we can benefit from the Sangha, how sharing the wisdom, how it's a reciprocal process, that you just offered deep Dharma right there for the Sangha through your questions, through your experience. You know, I learned. You know, and that's the ripple effect that it has. So thank you so much. So I will, there's something in the chat, and then we have, oh yes, oh, East Coast. Thank you for joining, East Coast. Yes, thank you very much. Take good care. So there's only there are a whole 3 minutes. I won't say only. There are 3 minutes that I would love to practice with you for. Is that okay? So that we can have a bit of that sitting. You know, I try not to, I'm working on using more inclusive language. So that's why I try to say embodied stillness, so that you can be in whatever posture that is accessible to you. So just arriving again, settling back into an embodied posture, embodied stillness. And allowing your body to settle, the words to settle. May all beings be safe, happy, and free. May all beings live with vitality, peace, and ease. May all beings live with kind, open, loving, wise, generous, joyous, compassionate, and equanimous hearts. And may the merits of our practice together be of benefit to all beings everywhere, excluding none, including ourselves. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.